Life Imitates Art by Whisper That Dares, read by Cookie Mom 6067. The Nubians are kept in a corral like cattle, and crowds of merrymakers pay to throw scraps to them. The Paris weather is far from like that of their homeland, but their keepers will not allow them attire that is not native to their sunny lands, for fear of not profiting off their hapless stock. I have managed to speak a word edgewise to the Nubian I have identified as their chief, that he is disinclined to quit their poor zoo. We are fed, we have shelter, all we must do is make them believe we are animals. Why would we leave? I tell you, Joseph, if this is what passes for civilization in Paris now, I may be so inclined to quit Paris and indeed all of Europe. How fair is our brother in Paris? Nicholas asked, spying the letter in Joseph's fingers with its elegant, crisp handwriting, seething with moral outrage. Joseph peeled himself off from where he was leaning against the post office's wall and handed the letter over to Nicholas to inspect. Our brother sends his disappointment, but I'm not sure if it's at Paris or at humanity, Joseph replied. His disappointment means he is well, then, Nicholas hummed, his light eyes scanning the letter. A display of primitives living in a facsimile of their native lands? Joseph's lip twisted, and he switched from English to a dialect of Arabic that no one but three people in all the world spoke anymore, one of them being Nicholas. Bah! People have always been drawn to the shocking and the freakish, with no concern how those seen as such feel. How many cripples have we seen ogled as entertainment? He recalled with equal amounts of chagrin and irritation when either he or Nicholas or both had been the target of curiosity. Remember Eugenia in Spain, that poor girl, but what else was there for her? It is good our brother can muster the compassion, Nicholas nodded. So few do. He folded the letter carefully and tucked it into the leather valise. What about her sister? Sebastian's letter had been waiting for them in Tenham, where Joseph and Nicholas had gotten off their train to continue their slow ramble across southern England on the way to Dover. The small band of immortals had spent more than a decade and a half away from Europe, away in another hemisphere, and part of that time embroiled in a war that had torn a nation in half. Joseph and Nicholas were on a well-deserved break, and they were going to take their sweet damn time traveling to Malta. She sent no word, not since that last telegram before we embarked in Boston, Joseph shrugged. Andromache had split from them in St. Louis, and the three of them had continued on together until they reached New York. Sebastian then left on his own, boarding a ship from there bound for Nantes. Joseph and Nicholas? Well, in the year of our Lord 1876, they'd washed ashore in Poole after a less than comfortable transatlantic passage in steerage. Now they'd stepped off the train in Tenham as planned, and also because Nicholas wanted to enjoy the sunny spring day and stretch his legs a bit, and Joseph could deny him nothing. Nicholas picked up his leather valise again, and Joseph shouldered a dead Confederate's knapsack across his back as they walked south through the center of Tenham towards the main road that would eventually take them east to Canterbury. Remember the cherry trees, Niccolo? Joseph asked, in their secret tongue, as he squinted in the bright sun. There were so many of them here once. They would be blooming at this time of year. Perhaps we should buy a cottage around here, Nicholas suggested, smiling. Plant an orchard full of them, or be like that man the Americans like to tell stories about, that Johnny Appleseed, and plant cherries wherever you go, Tesoro. You can cover the world with them. Ah, yes, and into each tree I will carve. Yusuf and Niccolo are here, and let people puzzle over that, he joked in reply, and Nicholas laughed. The road to Canterbury also linked to London. It was full of carts and carriages headed one way or the other, livestock and wheels kicking up choking dust in their wake. Joseph and Nicholas walked to one side where wildflowers bloomed in a riot of colors. Golden heads of wheat waved in the fields, soon to be harvested and sent to market. Nicholas's walking stick clicked a steady rhythm across the miles while Joseph pulled out a pocket journal, to make a quick sketch with a pencil as they ambled their way along. A man was approaching them, intending to pass. He didn't so much as walk, Jessup thought, and instead shuffled, shambled, more like a plague victim who refused to accept he was already dead. His hair shone like a newly minted copper penny, for he had no hat to protect him from the sun, and his coat was threadbare. It looked like he'd made something of an effort to keep his beard trim, though. "Look, Niccolo," Jessup gestured toward the man with a tilt of his head. "That looks like a little bird that could use your gentle ministrations, Habibi." Nicholas's brow creased and he shrugged. They had all the time in the world as immortals. A little delay to their next destination was no time at all. He raised a hand in greeting to the man approaching them and called out cheerfully, "Hello, are you in need of help? Where are you headed, my good fellow?" The ginger-haired man blinked, as if surprised that anyone would take a moment to even acknowledge him. There were dark hollows under his eyes, and Jessup had sudden cause to wonder if his gauntness was at all natural. He could not be older than 25. "Oh, hello, good sirs," the man stuttered, his English colored with an accent from the continent. "Please do not trouble yourselves on my behalf." Jessup instantly picked up on it from centuries of experience, even from this tiny utterance. "Eh? You're a Nederlander?" he asked in Dutch. The young man's narrow face instantly brightened and he smiled widely. "I am. I have been speaking my language so much, and it is good to hear it. My name is Vincent." "I am Jessup, and my traveling companion is Nicholas," Jessup said, with a small sweep of his hand. Nicholas just nodded at the mention of his name, for his command of Dutch was much less than Joseph's. He added, continuing, "You look to be in distress, and Nicholas and I are wondering if we may lend you assistance." Vincent hesitated for a moment, as if unsure how to answer. "There is no need, sirs. I have walked to London before and will do so again." His stomach then replied with a traitorous growl loud enough to be heard over the noise of a passing wagon. Jessup gave him a look of skepticism. "You're walking to London? From where did you start your journey, lad?" "From Ramsgate on the coast," Vincent said, sounding a little abashed, freckled cheeks flushing to match his hair. "My belly was full when I started out," he added with a weak smile. Jessup very much doubted the latter was true. He translated for Nicholas, who exclaimed in English to Vincent, "You have walked some 30 miles. On an empty stomach." Ever the mother duck, he sounded scandalized. "No, no, no, this will not do. Come, Jessup and I have walked this far from Tainham. We can stand to rest a little, and we welcome your company." Nicholas reached out to the young man and gave him a gentle push towards the shade of a tall oak that grew beside the road. Vincent resisted for a heartbeat before allowing himself to be steered. Jessup picked up Nicholas's valise and moved to follow. "You are not an Englishman either?" Vincent asked Nicholas as he was bade to sit on the grass. And when he sat, Jessup noticed the small hole worn into the sole of a shoe. Ah, that explained a little. Perhaps it could be patched before they parted ways. "I am from Genoa," Nicholas replied to Vincent's question. "Jessup and I are on our way to Dover and then the continent. We have been away for some time, and it is interesting to see what has and has not changed in our absence." Jessup passed him his valise, and Nicholas dug through it to find the sorry remains of a previous repast, an apple, and a canteen of lukewarm tea. It would do, though, and Vincent accepted it with grace. "I'm from Zundert," Vincent said, continuing mostly in English for Nicholas's benefit. "I came to work in London a few years ago, but..." He trailed, averting his eyes and taking a bite of the cheese that was left. "Well, that's not that important anymore." "And now you're walking over 70 miles to get there?" Nicholas asked. "Walking is free, as is the air and the sun, and many things in London are free to simply look at. There is so much that is unique if you are willing to look closely." Vincent shrugged. "And I like walking." "You'll do better if you don't end up walking barefoot," Jessup answered him, his tone wry. "Here, give me your shoe. I think I have a bit of leather to patch it so it might last you the rest of your walk, but you really should see a cobbler to fix it." He opened his knapsack to take stock, and the journal in his coat pocket shifted and fell onto the grass, the pages blowing open. Vince's eyes grew wide with excitement at the sight of the pencil sketches that covered the pages. He stopped himself from simply reaching for it and instead asked eagerly, "May I?" "My sketchbook for your shoe, and you may," Joe replied, curious and amused at the man's reaction. "No, really." He was still more of a boy, with all the adolescent awkwardness of one. "My uncle runs an art gallery in The Hague," Vincent said by way of explanation. "I worked for him and then went to work for an art auctioneer. Ended up in their London branch." His fingers carefully flipped the pages, admiring the strokes of Joseph's pencils. "These are very good." "Ah, this is the Arizona territory in America," Nicholas explained, pointing out the pictures. "These cliffs are of red sandstone, very bright, and in the mornings and evenings the sun turns them the color of gold." "I've never been there. To America, I mean, or Rome, or Barcelona, or much of anywhere. Not yet, anyway, but I would like to someday," Vincent said. "There are a lot of sketches of you in here," he added, laughing slightly, and Nicholas did too. Joseph silently breathed a sigh of relief that the sketchbook with the more arousing imagery was buried at the bottom of Nicholas's valise. Unlike others he'd encountered, Vincent seemed to neither notice nor care about how a man of Joseph's complexion learned how to speak anything but savage grunts. But he might care about pornography. Joseph took a leather notebook cover he wasn't using from his knapsack and with a penknife began to cut and shape it to patch the hole in Vincent's shoe, all while listening to him and Nicholas talk as he worked. Vincent absorbed the pictures in the sketchbook and Nicholas's descriptions, drinking them in like a thirsty man in a desert. These images of faraway places that he'd not yet seen. He was a dreamer, Joseph decided, a fragile, insubstantial soul that could easily be crushed into the dust of an uncaring world. "I've done a bit of drawing myself, although it's obviously not as good as this. The artist who had come to my uncle's gallery taught me a little. Here, look," Vincent said, pulling out loose folded sheets from an inner coat pocket. "Whenever I write to my brother Theo, he's still working for our uncle back home, I try to show him what I've seen." The lines were spidery and untrained to Joseph's eye, but there was potential there. "You're not half bad yourself, lad," he said to Vincent. "Keep at it, just a little bit every day, even if it's a few minutes on the clock, and you might make something of it." The man's eyelashes fluttered, and Joseph suddenly wondered if Vincent was prone to fits of melancholia like Sebastian, for a somber darkness tugged at the corners of his eyes and lips. It seemed terribly out of place on a face so young. "Thank you," Vincent murmured in Dutch, accepting the drawings back from Joseph. "I think I would like that, but I don't know. I'm almost 23, and I still haven't figured out what I want to do. I want to do something. Something of significance, I suppose, but I don't know what. The job in London didn't work out, and now I am at a loss what I should do next." Joseph shrugged and replied, "I have known men who have seen 80 winters, and they still don't know what to do with themselves. I would like to think there's nothing wrong with that as long as you live a good life. 23, you're still young. Anyway, all done with your shoe." He handed the shoe back to Vincent. From his knapsack, he also pulled out a fresh drawing pencil and pushed it towards the other man. "Here, take this, too." "Oh, no, sirs, you've been far too generous to me already," Vincent refused politely, "and I have nothing to repay you." "Take it," Joseph insisted, "as one artist to another." He took it from him then, his movement careful and gaze a little dazed. "Thank you, both. My parents would be outraged if I declared I wanted to be an artist, and I don't know if I could make a living, but I suppose it would not hurt to keep practicing. I wonder if Theo likes the drawings I send him. I hope he does. He's not been doing well lately, and I worry. I miss being able to talk to him." "Maybe you should go see him," Nicholas suggested, "once you're done with London." Vincent shrugged. "Maybe I will. Maybe I will find something to do with myself after all. You've been far too kind to one as impoverished as I am, but I think I can make it to London now, and after that..." He trailed off and spread his hands. After that, there is all the world. A short while later, Joseph and Nicholas watched Vincent disappear up the road, still walking towards London. No longer shambling, he walked with his back straight and his head up, wearing a gray felt hat that Nicholas insisted he take for his health. They quickly lost sight of him in the dust and traffic, and then they turned to keep their pace toward Canterbury. "You think he'll make it?" Nicholas asked when the sun was low on the horizon. His fingers brushed against Joseph's knuckles. The towers of Canterbury's cathedral were another mile away, and they'd find food and lodging there for the night. "To London, certainly. Beyond that, who could know?" Joseph frowned, not wanting to think of such a pure soul reduced to common labor just to survive. In this world, that was all too often the outcome, though.
"Perhaps it was good fortune or providence that we met," Nicholas added. "He seemed troubled in some way, much more than he was letting on, and I hope he'll be well."
He turned his attention to the road and the cathedral's towers ahead of them.
"So, tomorrow we will be in Dover by train, and God willing, France the morning after that. What would you like to do when we finally land back on the continent, mio caro?"
Joseph hummed. "I think sometime we should visit the art gallery that Vincent told us about, the one his uncle runs. And we should visit Paris on the way, see what's new since we were there last, and to drop in on our brother. He'll call us nuisances and brats, but he will love the company anyway. We could get him to show us around, just not the Nubian exhibit."
"No, definitely not the Nubian exhibit," Nicholas agreed, and Joseph impulsively slipped an arm around his shoulders and pulled him in for a kiss on his temple.
Nicholas laughed and blushed like he always did and always would, and Joseph let his embrace fall away. There would be things they would be more free to do once they reached Paris. They had all the time in the world.
"You met Vincent van Gogh?" Niall exclaimed in a heated whisper.
The air around them buzzed with at least a dozen different languages, but the volume of Niall's questions still made Joe twitch. The Van Gogh Museum was filled with everyday visitors and tour groups, but there was still the risk of being overheard, in Joe's opinion anyway.
"Well, like I said, yeah, but it's not like Nicky or I knew at the time," Joe answered sheepishly, keeping his voice down. "He was just some kid who needed some help."
They followed the gallery wall, stopping at Van Gogh's depiction of the Paris skyline from atop a hill. Niall said, with a note of playful accusation, "You gave him your pencil."
"The one he had was worn out nub and he needed a new one," Joe said defensively, spreading his hands in a shrug. "You're not suggesting I inspired him, yeah?"
"I totally think you did," she smirked.
They stood shoulder to shoulder, soaking the brushwork of the painting. Nicky and Andy were off elsewhere in the museum, and Joe suspected Andy was munching on another pain au chocolat somewhere. Niall, however, was not going to pass up coming to this museum while the team was in Amsterdam. One of Van Gogh's self-portraits hung nearby, the one with him in a coat, a cravat, and a black hat. He actually looked respectable, decent even. Niall asked then, "Did you ever see him again?"
Joe shook his head, sighing. "No, we didn't. I found out about his work when the rest of the world did. We also never made it to his uncle's art gallery in The Hague. Instead, we got off the ferry at Calais, took the train to Paris, and..." Joe felt a pang lance through him, the sting and the bitter heartache of the last 6 months. "We dropped in on Booker. He bought himself a pretty nice place in the middle of Montmartre. He still might have it, not sure if he sold it or not. Anyway, at the time and for decades, Paris was the place to be for anything to do with art. Whether you were a musician, a painter, or an actor, Montmartre was the center of it all. Nicky and I stayed longer than we planned, but we made it to Malta, eventually." He crossed his arms regarding Van Gogh's self-portrait. "Nicky and I never ran into him again, but I think Booker might have, through his brother, Theo, who had an art auction house and gallery in Paris. Booker got into all that and ended up bouncing between Paris and Provence over the next several decades. You'll never get him to shut up about how La Belle Epoque was the best thing ever, even if he fucking hates the Eiffel Tower." He looked down at the tips of his shoes. "I never really thought to ask him about it.
Maybe you should, Niall said, after a moment's hesitation. Booker's betrayal and subsequent exile was still a raw, open wound. It probably would be for a long time. And a long time was very long for immortals. Joe shook his head, but instead of answering her, he walked on through the gallery until he reached Van Gogh's Wheat Field with Crows, popularly thought of as the artist's last work, but actually wasn't. It remained as disturbing as the first time he'd seen it, with the black birds, the road cutting through the center of the undulating wheat and leading nowhere. Was it how that young man he'd known briefly saw himself at the end of his life? I sometimes wonder, Joe began after a lengthy silence, if either I or Nikki had done or said something different, could it have been better for him? I found out about how he was living those last few months. He was in pain. He was drunk a lot. And when he wasn't drunk, he was practically starving because he didn't have enough money for food. The village kids would throw rocks at him and follow him around and call him a freak. They'd taunt him and tell him he should cut off his other ear. They were doing that even on the last day when he shot himself. And was that the last straw, I wonder? That he died thinking he was worthless and a failure. Niall looked thoughtful. You were in the right place at the right time. Maybe you did give him a nudge in the right direction. She clasped her hands behind her back, rocking on her heels a bit. Her gaze didn't leave the painting. My grandma taught me that sometimes all it takes is a kind word to save someone and an unkind word to break them. What you showed him was kindness when no one else did. When he needed it. She continued, maybe it's not always like what Copley's Wall has shown us. Maybe it's not all about saving people in danger or helping refugees in war zones. Maybe sometimes it's as simple as giving someone a pencil. He didn't want to, but his mind drifted back to the last 6 months and Booker's bitter accusation, what would you know of all these years alone? You and Nikki always had each other, right? And all we had was our grief. Joe had fired back. Well, now you have even more. However, as the months had gone by, the realization had come that it wasn't just his loneliness he'd been speaking of, like Joe had assumed at the time. It was also for Andy and for her love of their lost sister, Quinn. Quinn, who had haunted their brother's nightmares for the last 200 years from her prison at the bottom of the sea. The nightmares would always be with Booker because they would never and could never meet. And now that burden was on Niall, too. Vincent had died lonely, too, thinking his life, his art, his passion had all amounted to nothing. He sighed again, thinking of Booker. Still, though, their brother's pain had been no excuse for the actions he'd taken, that his suicide bid had the extra collateral damage of almost turning them all into guinea pigs and lab rats. He shook his head as if trying to free himself from this train of thought. No, Booker's choices weren't Joe's or Nikki's responsibility. Yet, if Joe had just said something different, would any of that have needed to happen at all? There was no way to know. His dark ruminations were interrupted when he spotted Nikki and Andy coming towards them. Niall waved them over, standing on her tippy toes as she did. Nice landscape, Andy said, looking at Wheat Field with Crows. Our sister may have been an inspiration for countless artists, but she's a complete Philistine when it comes to actually appreciating or making art, Nikki added, jerking his thumb at her. Hey, I tried ceramics once, Andy said, sticking her tongue out at him and giving him a poke in the ribs. I made a lot of snakes. It was great. And the Philistines were actually pretty cool people. Really? Niall raised a skeptical eyebrow. You're telling me, Miss Andromache of Scythia, I have priceless masterworks of art I'm keeping in an abandoned mine in the middle of fucking nowhere, has no artistic ability? She definitely doesn't. That's why she keeps them in a mine underground, Joe said, winking at Niall. Andy rolled her eyes. Niall grinned and laughed. Joe slipped away as Niall and Nikki bent heads together to chat about their chance encounter with the great artist-to-be on the road, and Andy declaring that one of Van Gogh's self-portraits looked like a blob to her. He found himself in the museum gift shop and wondering what Vincent would make of the Starry Night Lego set. He'd probably be completely bewildered and maybe even a little horrified at the crass commercialism. He ended up purchasing a massive paperback collecting the letters exchanged between the Van Gogh brothers, complete with the drawings Vincent had sent Theo. Joe's mouth quirked in a small smile at the picture of the Royal Road in Ramsgate, the very same one Vincent had eagerly shown them while sitting on the grass on that sunny spring day. He'd read this collection before, but it had been decades since then, and he suddenly wanted to reacquaint himself with it. He also bought a pack of blank greeting cards with pictures of all of Vincent's great works on them. Later that night, he was thumbing through the paperback. Niall had dragged Andy along with her out of their apartment, determined to hit the Amsterdam Christmas market. Fat, fluffy snowflakes fluttered down from the sky outside their window while a fireplace crackled. "You've been quiet since we came back from the museum, mio caro," Nikki said, sliding onto the ottoman across from Joe. He had a tray with two tall mugs of Mexican hot chocolate, and he passed one to Joe. Niall had introduced them all to it, and Joe was sometimes left puzzled how he managed to live for so long without knowing about this glorious fucking ambrosia. "What's on your mind?" "Just..." He stopped, sighing, his breath long and frustrated. "Booker. Ah..." Nikki took a sip of his hot chocolate, patiently waiting for his love to continue, his expression betraying nothing. "Just walking through the museum, thinking of what Vincent went through after we saw him off. He was so happy, so ready to take on the world. It still hurts to think about it." And there was something Niall said, that maybe giving him a pencil changed the world, that something insignificant is all it takes. "Kindness is never insignificant, Yusuf," Nikki said after another thoughtful sip. "You should write a letter to our brother. Let him know we love him and that we miss him." Joe cocked his head, regarding Nikki curiously. "You pushed for exile as much as I did." "Well, not as long, but you still did." "Yes, I did. And I think he still needs time to find his own way, and we still need space. I think also, though, he needs to know someone still cares for him." He eyed the book in Joe's hands. "Vincent was a very difficult man in his later years. But even when his illness drove everyone else away, Theo never stopped loving him, never stopped nurturing him. He was even there on the day Vincent finally died, so his brother wouldn't die alone." Joe looked away, not really seeing the words on the page anymore. "They're buried together too, side by side, brothers through eternity." Nikki hummed. "So write a letter to our brother. Ask him how he's doing. And let him know he can write us back any time he wants. Copley has his address in Paris." Joe closed the book and sat back against the couch. "You won't be angry that I'm going to do this. I know how much it hurt you, too. I saw you get hurt, Niccolo, because of the stupid choices he made." He reached out a free hand to grasp Nikki's and brushed his lips across his knuckles. Nikki chuckled and shook his head. "I know you forgave him a long time ago. You've always been too soft-hearted, too quick to forgive. However, if you were so hardened, unyielding, unforgiving, where would you and I have ended up? Not like this, I think." Joe pursed his lips and considered. "I forgave you." "You did," Nikki said with another little chuckle. "Drink your hot chocolate before it grows cold, mio caro, or before Andy comes home and decides to drink it for you." He kissed Joe on the forehead and on the lips and moved back off to the kitchen where he was already preparing ahead of Christmas in the next few days. Joe savored a deep sip of his Mexican hot chocolate, perfection in a cup. he found at the gift shop bag where he'd left the greeting cards he'd bought earlier and flipped through them. No, he was not going to send Booker a greeting card with Vincent and his bandaged ear on it. That would be morbid and maybe even a little rude. He finally settled for one of the iris paintings Vincent had made while in the asylum at Saint-Rémy de Provence, the one with the vase and the yellow walls, something to brighten the long winter nights. His pen hovered over the blank space of the card, uncertain what to say or how to begin. Finally, he pressed the pen down. "My dear Sebastian." The end.